Okay, Gemar Chasima Tov, everyone. I apologize in advance if my voice is a little weaker than usual. I'm just a little bit recuperating from Yantif. But it's really a wonderful, wonderful program that Ritz has put together with the Torathon. For those who are listening online, the place is packed. Really hundreds of people. And it's really a kavod that you're joining us virtually. And it's really a wonderful thing. And I want to thank Yaakov Trump, Rabbi Trump, and everyone who helped work so hard on putting together such a wonderful program. But what a beautiful idea that in a day that would generally just be, I would say a standard day of learning, to kind of focus our intensity a little bit on the aspirational aspects of Yomim Noraim, so that as we move our way into Yom HaKippurim, we do so perhaps with a deeper and more solid foundation of ambition in terms of our growth in Torah and Yerushalayim. So let's begin. So what I'd like to talk about for a little bit this afternoon, the title of this shiur, The Cast of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. I would like to talk about the various individuals that are involved in the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. So as many of you know, in Parshas Achrimos, the Torah tells us that there is a fairly complex but highly structured process through which the Kohen Gadol essentially achieves Kapora on behalf of Klal Yisrael, the Chiper Ba'ado, Uva'ad Beiso, Va'ad Kol Adas Yisrael. And the Torah tells us that as part of that structure, as part of that procedure, that the Kohen Gadol is instructed precisely how many times he's Tovel, how many times he changes Begadim, exactly how the different Korbanos work, all the different components that are involved in Avodas Yom HaKippur. And the Torah tells us that in order to move on from one stage of Avodas Yom HaKippurim to another, you have to complete each individual stage. Nearing the end of this process, so we know the Kohen Gadol at some point towards the middle involves himself in the mitzvah of what we call Hagrola. Hagrola is the mitzvah to essentially identify two completely identical Seirim, choose between each one of them. One is going to go LaHashem, one is going to go LaAzazel. The avoda with the one that's LaHashem is processed as such, and the one that's LaAzazel eventually receives on the part of the Kohen Gadol a vidui on behalf of all of the avonos of Klal Yisrael, and then this seir is handed over to what the Torah calls the Ish Iti, which is some sort of anonymous individual, and that individual guides the seir towards the Midbar, eventually all the way out, about 12 mil away from the Mikdash itself, and ultimately throws the Seir off the cliff, off the Seir La'azazel, and that achieves Kapora for Klal Yisrael. So the Mishnah tells us in Yuma, on Samaches Amud Beis, if you look at the first source over here, the Mishnah tells us, Amru lo l'kohen gadol. So what happens here is the Kohen Gadol walks up to the Ish Iti. He hands him this Seir that's going to go La'azazel. The next stage in the Avodah is when the Kohen Gadol leaves the Azara in order to do the Kriyas HaTorah. The Kohen Gadol would read the Torah on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah tells us, Amru lo l'Kohen Gadol, they would say to the Kohen Gadol, Higia Seir Lamidbar. They would let him know that the Seir that you initiated by empowering this Ish Iti has in fact reached the precipice of the Midbar. Uminayin hayu yodin, how did they know this? Shegia Seir lemidbar, so dirchos hayu osu menayifin besudrin v'yodin shegia Seir lemidbar. They would set up a flag system, in which case each post would report to the post behind it, and the communication would be such that it would return to the Kohen Gadol, and once he learned that the Seir had reached the Midbar, the Kohen Gadol was allowed to move on. Says Rashi, She'eno Rishoy Lahaschil Ba'avoda Acheres Ad She'igia Seir LeMidbar. Until the Seir reaches the Midbar, the Kohen Gadol is prohibited from proceeding to the next phase of the Avoda. So each phase of the Avodah presumes that the next phase has been achieved, and so therefore the Kohen Gadol is paralyzed, standing there in the Azara. He cannot go anywhere until he receives word that the Ish Iti and the Seir La'azazel have reached the Midbar. And the Tosfos Yeshanim tells us that this takes the assumption that the mitzvah of Seir La'azazel, this phase of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, is accomplished once they reach the Midbar. In contrast to other deos in the Gemara, that it requires all the way to get to the cliff and to push off of the cliff. That's the opinion of the Mishnah. And the Rambam paskens this in Hilchos Avodas Yom HaKippurim in Perek Gimel. If you look about four lines before the bottom, where they get wide, and source number 3, V'darchayos ayu osinu manifim b'sujik kdei sheyadu shigia si'ir lamidbar. They would create this flag system, says the Rambam, and they would know that the si'ir reached the midbar. And then the Rambam says in Halacha Ches, Kaven shigia si'ir lamidbar, once the si'ir does reach the midbar, yatza behen kohen gadol, the kohen gadol could leave le'ezras nashim likras b'tor. Before the seer reaches the midbar, the Kohen Gadol cannot go anywhere. So, that's the Gemara, and that's the Rambam. If we look at source number 4, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, when discussing the relationship between the Lashon Shel Zahoris, which was the big giant piece of tongue-shaped red wool that would hang in the Mikdash, that would turn white in order to essentially express the tahara, the kapara, that would happen on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara tells us that there was a phase where the Ish Iti would take the Lashon Shel Zahoris with him all the way out to the Midbar, all the way out to the Tzok, to the cliff itself, and says the Gemara, he would actually split the wool into two. Half of it he would tie on a rock next to the cliff. Half he would tie around the horns of the animal itself. The Gemara tells us, "V'natrei kuli v'sela." Why don't you tie the whole thing onto the rock? Why are you ripping this thing into two? So says the Gemara, "Kaven de mitzvah b'se'ir." Since the mitzvah here is to push the se'ir off the cliff, what are we worried about? Dilma kadimu milavin. Maybe all of the tfilos of Klal Yisrael and the avoda of the Kohen Gadol all the way back in the Mikdash is proceeding with so much intensity and is so successful that the kapara for Klal Yisrael happens prematurely, and so therefore the Lashon Shel Zahoris turns from red to white already before the animal is pushed off the cliff. The Ish Iti sees it turn white, and so therefore he says to himself, "Umaisiv Daite," he doesn't think he has to push it off. And says the Gemara, "But mitzvah b'se'ir," but there's a mitzvah to push it off the cliff. So since there's a mitzvah to push it off the cliff, they can't leave the whole thing on the rock. You put half of it on the se'ir, and this way you know that until you push it off the cliff, you don't really know whether or not it's happened or not. So the Gemara says, V'naktre kule ben karna. So put the whole thing on the se'ir. Why do you rip it in half at all? So the Gemara says, Zimnim dikamash leilereishi. Sometimes when it tumbles down, the head will go first. You won't be able to see it, and then we won't even know whether or not the Lashon Shel Zahoris turned white altogether. So the implication from this Gemara, says Rav Soloveitchik, is that the mitzvah of the Seir La'azazel is not complete at the moment that he reaches the midbar, but rather the mitzvah of the Seir La'azazel is complete at the moment that the Ish Iti knocks the animal off of the cliff. And that's what the Rambam paskins in Halacha Zay, Chetzio Kosher B'Sela, half of it would be tied to a rock. The chetz of kosher ben shtei kronov, an app would be tied around its horns. V'dachfu la'achorav u'mizkalgo v'yoreid. He would push it off the cliff, it would roll down, and that would be the end of it. Lo yamegila chatzot shunasei borim evorim, and it would split apart, and this was the mitzvah of se'ir la'azazel. So the question that is posed by the Rav is, which one is it? How could the Rambam paskin both based on the assumption that the mitzvah of Seir La'azazel comes to a completion when the animal and the Ish Iti reach the edge of the midbar, and simultaneously hold that one has to engage in this entire procedure in order to ensure that the real mitzvah is accomplished, which is pushing the animal off the cliff? That's the question. What is the real mitzvah of Seir La'azazel? What's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is, when can the Kohen move on? Because, and this is a significant amount of time, the difference between the entrance to the midbar, already transversing the midbar and throwing it off the cliff, is a significant amount of time. How long is the Kohen Gadol paralyzed in the Azara, unable to make his way to the Ezras Nashim for the Kriyas HaTorah and for the culmination of Avodas Yom HaKippurim? Is it only until the Ish Iti reaches the midbar, or is it until the Ish Iti reaches all the way at the end? So the Rav posits that this seems to be a stira in the Rambam. In order to address this, we begin to try to understand what is the relationship between the Kohen Gadol and this Ish Iti. How is that relationship forged, and what is the nature of what's going on here? So the Gemara tells us in Yuma, on Daf Samach Vav Amud Beis, Iti v'afilu bituma. A very strange halach. Let's say you've designated this ish iti. This ish iti, a particular individual, they are going to be the one to take the animal all the way to the midbar. So the Gemara says, what happens if they wake up Yom Kippur morning and lo and behold, serendipitously, they ended up getting involved in a situation and they became tameh. Now they're tameh. So says the Gemara, what do we do? Because we know that the Kohen Gadol has to hand off the animal to the ish iti. So the Gemara says, iti v'afilu b'tuma l'may hilchasa. With respect to what halacha do we include the iti's qualifications even if he became tameh? With respect, Amar Rav Sheshes, lo marshim nitma mishalcho nichnas tameh la'azara u'mishalcho. We have an amazing halacha. Normally, we do not allow someone who's tameh to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. But a special dispensation, which ironically occurs on Yom HaKippurim, the day that we're being most conscientious about the tahara of the Kohen Gadol himself, he's going to the mikvah, you know, many, many times. We're so super careful about his tumah. We kept him awake all night, so we wouldn't have any shilas about his own tumah. Nevertheless, if the ish iti becomes tameh, strangely, we allow him the license to enter into the mikdash so that the Kohen Gadol can personally engage the ish iti and initiate his shlichus and allow him to proceed and ultimately take the animal as the seir la'azazel. So says the Rav Nikovitz Chidushei Torah. Harambam kimat mifurushta b'shiluach ikach alos din shel kiyum avodas hayom eitzel haKohen Gadol yedei mesiras haseir l'mishalch. He says that the Rambam's assumption, and this is the beginning of his understanding of how to reconcile the two Gemaras and the two Rambams, that the Rambam's assumption is as follows. That the process of initiating this shlichus, the launch of the ish iti, is in and of itself a chelek of the avodas Yom HaKippur. The mesira of the so'ir to mishalcho, that itself is part of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. But Al-Kain, not just simply something that has to happen in order for the animal to reach. It's not just a pragmatic consideration. The Kohen Gadol has to hand it to him in order for him to go. No, there's a formality, there is a significance, there is a substance to the very fact that the Kohen Gadol hands it over to him. Al-Kain shapir tzorech ha-mishaleach likonis la'azara. And therefore the mishaleach has to enter into the Azara. Mipnei chalos kiyum avodas yom shel Kohen Gadol. Du rak be'azara kichol seder avodas hayom. The Kohen Gadol's avoda must take place in its entirety within the framework of the Mikdash Hashem. And so therefore, since we see that we allow the ish iti to enter into the Mikdash afilu bitoma, that must be because is initiation of the Kohen Gadol is part and parcel of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim itself. If it's part and parcel of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim itself, it must take place in the framework of the Beis HaMikdash. If it has to take place in the framework of the Beis HaMikdash, we have no choice but to surrender to the circumstances that we find ourselves in, allow the Ish Iti Bituma to enter into the Mikdash, so that the Kohen Gadol could ultimately appoint him and send him on his way. Rav quotes a number of Rambams that make clear to accentuate this notion that he has to be moser the seir to the mishalcho. As the Rambam writes in Perek Beis, two lines before the bottom, u'moser ha-seir le-mishalcho la'adzozer. And the Rambam writes again, ve'achar kach in halacha zayin, ve'achar kach mishaleach es ha-seir achai, v'yad ish ha-muchan, that's the ishiti, lo-holicho le-midbar, ve'akol k'sherin lo-holicho. So then the Rambam writes that he used to try to get Kohanim Gedolim, but really everyone is qualified. So says the Rav in source number 10, in his Kovetz Chidushei Torah, that even though we know, and he points out the fact that the next avoda that the Kohen Gadol has to do, which is the Kriyas Sefer Torah, that in and of itself is not considered a core component of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, and we know that because it takes place in the Ezras Noshim, and so therefore it must not be part of the foundational elements of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. So says the Rav, you see that the Kohen Gadol cannot move on to the next phase, even though the next phase is not considered necessarily part of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, because his current role in Avodas Yom HaKippurim has not been finished. And it's not been finished until the Ish Iti reaches where he's going. And that's what he writes in the second paragraph. Vasher dinire kemo kishasafti, the maisa hashiluach shel avodas hayom, hu kiyum shel kohen gadol. The maisa hashiluach is part of the kiyum of the kohen gadol. Ve'av shekvar mosar sasir mishalcho, mikol makom kol zman shelo higia seir lamidbar, vashiluach lo niskayim adayin chos kiyum shel kohen gadol. Even though the Kohen Gadol handed over the Seir, until the Seir reaches the Midbar, until the Ish Iti transverses that area and makes his way to the desert, the Kohen Gadol cannot move on because his current role as the Kohen Gadol in the context of Avodas Yom HaKippurim has not been completely finished. And so therefore his Avoda is not just to be Moser, the Seir, but to be Moser the Seir, and for the Seir to reach its destined location. And that's what he writes, the Labdavka etza Maisa Mesiras HaSeir L'Meshalcho. It's not just the Maisa HaMesira, Tkim Dikol Maisa HaShiluach Ad Gemar Mitzvoso HaVikiyum. It's the entire Shlichus of the Ish Iti that's part of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim of the Kohen Gadol himself. And that's what he writes. He can't leave the Azara, and he can't take off the big day lavan, and he has to remain where he is. He is totally paralyzed until this Ish Iti reaches the Midbar. And that's fascinating, because remember, the drama of Avodas Yom HaKippurim is taking place in the Mikdash. This experience of the Seir La'Azazel is going to take place in a completely different location. Nevertheless, not only does the Kohen Gadol have to hand in the Seir in the context of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, which we see by virtue of the fact that we allow the Tomei to enter the Mikdash, but he can't move on from where he is until the Ish Iti actually reaches the Midbar. The Shlichus itself has to be complete. And so this is what the Rav suggests, that there are two dinim in how the Kohen Gadol is related to the world of the Seir HaMishtaleach. And that's why the Rambam seems to quote both measures in terms of when this actually is complete. What are the two dinim? So in the second line, in source 11, the HaRambam Sover, the Din Shiluach HaShayach L'Kiyuma, U'L'Seder Avodas Yom Shel Kohen Gadol, the Emes Toli Rak B'Midbar V'Lo B'Tchias L'Tzok, that the component of the avoda of the Kohen Gadol for Yom HaKippurim is just to ensure that the Ish Iti reaches the actual edge of the Midbar. That's what's required before the Kohen Gadol moves on. That's how much of the avoda is needed before the Kohen Gadol moves on. What about the rest of it? The Rambam said the real mitzvah is not over, quotes the Gemara, until you throw it over. That's why you have to tie the Loshen Shel Zeuris on both the horns and the Sela. So on that component, he says, however, v'din shiluach d'chiyas l'tzok nema rak be'achetza shel soyer. D'tzorech li'izkayim ba'adha, eno shayich l'kiyumo shekohen gadol. He says, the mitzvah to push the Seir La'Azazel over the edge, that's not part of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim of the Kohen Gadol. That is an independent requirement, an independent mitzvah sayom that we have empowered and entrusted the Ish Iti with, and that is his goal, that is his requirement to go ahead and do on Yom HaKippur. The Kohen Gadol has to ensure that his avoda is complete before he moves on. It's not complete when he hands it over, it's complete when he reaches the Midbar, but from the edge of the Midbar until the tzok itself, until the cliff itself, that is remains completely in the zone of this Ish Iti. And that's what he writes. Trei dinim ein shiluach asoyer lemidbar me'akrov v'shilach bi'ad iti amidbara, and that's on the Kohen Gadol, v'dechias latzok, and that's part of the pasuk v'nos asoyer sabonosof shal eretz k'zer v'u chalos din shiluach be'achetza shal soyer t'lo nemar v'lo shayach klal l'Kohen Gadol. And that has nothing to do with the Kohen Gadol, and that's the way it's structured. So the question is, that we have to ask ourselves, is this is a fascinating framework. This means that the Kohen Gadol is essentially living in two worlds. On one hand, the Ish Iti is critical and essential for the Kohen Gadol to be able to accomplish his Avodas Yom HaKippur, but only until he reaches the Midbar. from the midbar to the end, that's already in the zone of the Ishiti. That has nothing to do with the Kohen Gadol. The question is, why is that so? Why would we structure, why would the Torah structure this that we know what the purpose of the Seir Lazazel is? The purpose of the Seir Lazazel is to reach the cliff. This would be thrown off the cliff to be mechaper for the Avonos of Klal Yisrael. So, one way or the other. So, either terminate the Kohen Gadol's role at the outset when he empowers the Ishiti and he leaves the Beis HaMikdash, or link the entire journey of the Ishiti to the Kohen Gadol's Avodas Yom HaKippurim. Why would the Torah bifurcate these two components of the journey and essentially say, no, until the Midbar, that's still part of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. Once you reach the Midbar and you're just going from the Midbar to the cliff, that already is in the hands of the Ishiti and has not nisyaches to the Kohen Gadol at all. That's independent. Why would the Torah divide the journey in this very specific way? And for this, we need to understand this individual, this Ishiti. Who was this Ishiti? And that's really the question that I'd like to explore for a few minutes. So we're going to look at three Gemaras. The first Gemara is the Gemara on Samach Zayin, and that's what we discussed a little bit before. And that is Tana Rabban. So the Gemara tells us in source number 12, Ish lahachshir es hazor. So first of all, an Ishiti could be a Zor. It doesn't have to be a Kohen. That itself is a big Chiddush. He's playing a major role. His role is Me'akev in the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, and yet he doesn't have to be a Kohen. So that itself is a big Chiddush. Iti, Vaf, Iti Shiyu Mizumon. It has to be, he has to be appointed beforehand. Iti, Vafilu B'Shabbos, Iti, Vafilu B'Tumah. So the Gemara says, what do all these things mean? So the Gemara says, Iti afilu b'Shabbos. What does that have to do with anything? That if the animal, let's say the Seir La'azazel, gets sick on the way down, through the desert, so the Ish Iti is given dispensation that even though on Yom HaKippurim we don't carry, he's allowed to put the animal on his shoulders and carry him the rest of the way. Says the Gemara, Iti b'afilu b'toma, and that's what we discussed before, that even if he's tamei, Yom Rav Sheishas, Shim Nintza Mishalcho, Nichnas L'tamei, La'azor Mishalcho. So this Ish Iti is a very enigmatic personality in the context of Yom HaKippurim. Yom HaKippurim focuses on the Kohen Gadol as a man of eminent stature, with a lot of preparation, with a lot of focus. We're mafreshing the Kohen Gadol beforehand. We ensure that he's separated from his family. He knows the Avodah Kol. This Ish Iti, not only does he have looser qualifications, he has entirely halachically flexible qualifications. He's allowed to be a Zar, even though he's involved in Avodas Yom HaKippurim. He's allowed to essentially be Mechalel Shabbos, if necessary. He's allowed to enter the Mikdash Tamei. What is this guy doing? It's part of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. What kind of compromise is that in the identity of one of the primary protagonists in achieving Kapara for Klal Yisrael? Why are we allowing so much elasticity in his piety, in his stature, when he plays such a significant role? The Gemara also tells us the following. In source number 13, the Gemara tells us, Barishona, at the beginning, they used to hang the Loshen Shel Zahoris, the wool, on the outside of the Ula, Mibachutz. So what happened? Imagine if this happened in Yom HaKippurim in all of our shuls, right? I'm the rabbi of a shul. We put a big board at the front, like a game show. And essentially, if Klal Yisrael, if everybody davens well and doesn't fall asleep during the drasha, then there's a big sign that says, you're forgiven. And at the end of Ne'ilah, if it didn't happen, if people were not intense enough and the tshuva wasn't there, survey says, right? And that would be the end of Yom HaKippur. So people went crazy. People couldn't handle that. People need hope. People need confidence. People need a sense of aspiration and motivation. Things are going well. People need that type of encouragement. So the Gemara says, what would happen? Some years it wouldn't turn right, and it would completely debilitate Klal Yisrael. So what did they do? Hiskinu shiukoshin al pesach ulam mibifnim. So what would they do? They put it on the inside of the ulam. They put it on the inside, so Klal Yisrael couldn't see it. So what happens? But of course that's not going to work. You're dealing with Jews, right? So it's on the inside, right? We're building a shul. There's a big sign in the front of the shul. It's a construction site. It's an active construction site. all of the Borkers walk around with hard hats and things fall on their head, right? And there's a big sign that says, no one's allowed. And obviously that means no one except for the 9,000 from families up a Zedek, right? Who feel like entering the building and looking around. And the contractors tell us all the time, very nice Arab fellows, tell us all the time that they'll just be in there. People will come in and they'll look around and they'll take measurements and they'll make comments and they'll, why? Who told them they could go in? No one told them they could go in. There's a big sign that says they're not allowed in. It doesn't, this is what you choose. No one tells us where to go, right? You put a sign, you can't walk. What do you mean you can't walk in? I go where I want to go. I pay membership. I want to walk in the building. I walk in the building. That doesn't apply to me. So that was Klal Yisrael. You're telling us we can't look at the Lashon Shel Zohoris? So they did a little peek and it didn't work as well. So the Gemara tells us that ultimately they had to move the whole thing away because everybody felt ownership over what was going on. I remember I used to be the director of NCSY. And I was running a Shabbaton in a very, very affluent community. And it was a Shabbaton for middle school kids. And at the end of Friday night, we were getting absolutely killed. Like, the kids were just totally out of control. So we were just happy for the night to be over. And we were organizing everyone into walking groups. I don't know if you've ever done youth groups before. But you always organize the children into walking groups. So if something bad happens, it happens to a lot of them. So we went ahead and we were organizing these walking groups. And there's one kid we can't find. And he finally shows up. And everybody's gone. It's like 11:30 at night. And this kid's standing. And I'm talking to him in the lobby. And he's like in seventh grade. So he's like comes up to hear on me. And I said to him, where have you been? Where the whole group's waiting for you, the whole Shabbatos, and this kid's been in chutzpah the whole Shabbos, it's been impossible, totally impossible. And we're going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and finally he looks at me and he goes, Rabbi, he says, you cannot tell me what to do in this lobby. So I said, what do you mean I can't tell? I'm in charge of this program. I'm the director. I'm the one who gets paid $6 an hour. I'm in charge of what's going on here. I can tell you where to go. We're going to go. He looks at me and he goes, you can't tell me what to do in this lobby. And then he looks at me, I'm telling you, seventh grade. He says, you see that plaque? And I said, yes. And he says, that plaque is my parents. I own this lobby. And you can't tell me what to do in this lobby. Right? The point is that, we feel a certain ownership of where we are. So that's so they had to move it along. They had to move it along. But what was the consequence of sending this Lashon Shel Zohoris with the Ishiti? What's the consequence? Before, the whole Jewish people got to see a corroboration that our tshuva was accepted. Now, who's the only one who gets to know whether or not that wool turned from red to white? Who do we trust? Who's the one that comes back to Klal Yisrael and says, Taka, the tshuva was accepted? Not the Kohen Gadol, not the head of the Sanhedrin, not this guy, this Zor, this Tomei, this Mechalel Shabbos, this nobody, this Yotz, this Ishiti, this guy who is the only one crazy enough to volunteer to walk the whole desert, Don Yom HaKippurim, he's the one that's going to decide what's going to be, right? You can imagine how much he has to carve up before if you ever, Mir Tashem, you'll all be Rabbanim, and you'll stand up to give your Kol Nidre Drushas, and you'll see what it looks like. The whole Am Yisrael looks like this, the Imamish, and they're like holding their breath because they've stuck so much water and carbs and pasta and everything, and you're trying to talk to them about Tshuva and the Rabbeinu Tam and the Darim, and they literally look like if you just puncture them with a little needle, they would go flying through the room, right? This guy who's like trying to kill himself to be part of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, he's the one we're going to trust, he's the one that comes back. And finally, the Gemara in Yuma tells us in Samach Vavam in Beis, this is the craziest part, the Gemara says, it's a Mishnah. Mikri Yushalayim Oyim Laban Oso Ad Sukkah Rishon. We used to make little sukkos for him along the way. And at each sukkah, what was there? What was there? A kiddush. A kiddush. Just in case he got hungry or thirsty. If the Ishiti felt dehydrated, he felt, right now you get all the shilas right before Yom Kippur. Everybody calls you with the shilas. Now, Rabbi, I have a cold and I really need to take the NyQuil and I need water, but I don't like water without food and I feel like I'm going to die and what do I do? Right? There's a whole... Right? So there's a whole discussion, says the Gemara, Shiva umechta lechomil akol sukkah v'sukkah omrim lo harei mazon v'harei mayim. Right? That there is mazon and there is mayim. Harei mazon v'harei mayim. That you have mazon and mayim. Except for the last one, she'omin mirachok, that you stand from afar. So not only does the ish iti permitted to be tum, not only is the ish iti potentially, right, not a kohen, not only is the ish iti potentially a mechalel Shabbos, but now we find out that the ish iti is actually given the license, if he has to eat and drink on Yom HaKippurim, and not eat and drink on Yom HaKippurim if it's an emergency and there's nothing that we could do. We call Hatzalah, right? Those guys are so into Yom Kippur, right? And they come running from all directions and, you know, those down the poles and everything like that with the radios. That's not what we're talking about. Adarabah, we set up a table with Nash and Gatorade and we set it up so the guy could have a kiddush on Yom Kippur if that's what he needs. So what is going on that this ish iti is so compromised? So in this Kutras Nof Mordechai, he begins to develop this fascinating contrast, and you could read through it on your own. And the contrast is between the stature and eminence of the Kohen Gadol, who is somebody who is literally entrusted, as he writes, he has Tovel Chamesh Tevilos, the Eser Kiddushin, Hichlevis Pigodov, Ovar Avodes Hayom B'dam Apar. He gets to go into the Kodesh Akdashim. He gets to be Lifnai V'Lifnim. The Kohen Gadol is sequestered for a week before Yom Kippur. We have to make sure he's not anywhere near the ideology of a Tzeduki. I mean, we are investing so much energy and effort. We have a backup for the Kohen Gadol. So much energy and effort to be sure that the Yiras Shamayim and that the Avoda of the Kohen Gadol is pristine, is of the highest stature, the highest level possible. And the contrast between himself and the Ish Iti, where there is such unrestrained flexibility, where there is such elasticity in terms of who he could be and what he could be dealing with over the course of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, is striking. But the truth is, if we take a step back, we recognize that not only are both fundamental components of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, but that they are interdependent components of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. Because the Kohen Gadol doesn't just hand the Seir to the Ish Iti and tell him, you know, Gemar Chasim Etova, and, you know, let us know how it goes. No, the Kohen Gadol, says the Mishnah, is fully paralyzed until this guy gets to do what he needs to do. Until his avoda minimally reaches the midbar, the Kohen Gadol can't move on in the avoda. So the Kohen Gadol's avoda, his destiny for Yom HaKippurim, is completely contingent on this Ish Iti, who is a nobody compared to who the Kohen Gadol is. And the Ish Iti's avoda on Yom HaKippurim, which is taking place with all of this flexibility, the truth is, if you look at source number 19 and 20, the Ramban explains that the Ish Iti, even though the Seir La'azazil is not your classic korban, it's being dealt with outside of the Mikdash itself, it doesn't have a traditional Shechita, obviously. Nevertheless, there are dimensions of it that do manifest its status as some sort of korban. The Ish Iti's experience is Me'akev, the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. So it's a fascinating interplay. That here the Kohen Gadol is of such greater stature, but at the same time, the Ish Iti is so fundamental to the Kohen Gadol accomplishing his goal. And that's the question, really, that we have to understand. How is it possible that the cast of Yom HaKippurim has such diametrically opposite religious personalities, and at the same time, they seem to be so unbelievably dependent upon each other? And so the truth is, if we take a step back, we begin to realize that Yom HaKippurim, even though its tone and its experience and its avoda projects such a substantial status of idealism and purity, that Yom HaKippurim also incorporates within it an affirmation of the other dimensions of life that don't live in the world of aspiration, that don't live in the world of perfection. Life has a mikdash, and life has a midbar. life has a Kohen Gadol and life has an Ish Iti. And Yom HaKippurim is not about only living saturated in the Kedusha of the Mikdash. Yom HaKippurim is recognizing how one's entrenchment in the Mikdash also necessitates a confrontation with the reality of the Midbar. Yom HaKippurim is about recognizing that the destiny of the Kohen Gadol is contingent on the journey of the Ish Iti. That within us, there is a dimension of aspiration that we have for greatness. There's something that we're trying to achieve in life. We're trying to refine our midos. We're trying to build our future families. We're trying to develop our learning. We're trying to become Talmidei Chachamim. We're trying to work on our interpersonal relationships. We're trying to refine our sense of Yiras Shamayim and how it manifests itself in our larger Avodas Hashem. Even though there are so many aspects where we're striving for the world of Mikdash, the reality of life is we often function simultaneously in the world of the Midbar. And the world of the Midbar is the world that is just not perfect. It's the world where sometimes Tumah is unavoidable and has to be dealt with. It's the world where sometimes Chilul Shabbos happens because of things beyond our control. Sometimes we find ourselves, even in pursuit of spirituality, in circumstances that demand compromise, because that's just where we find ourselves holding. The world of the Midbar is the world where, even though we're trying so hard to fast on Yom HaKippurim, sometimes the challenges and the tests and the vicissitudes of life are so overwhelming that they consume us and they pull us down. And we often think that's not part of Yom HaKippurim. That's what you're leaving in the dust. After Elul, we're perfect now. We had Aseres Yimei Tshuva. We're bringing in Kol Nidre. We're bringing in Yom HaKippurim. We don't even need a long Slichos anymore. We're ready to go. We're mamish. We're there. We're mamish in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Says the Torah, the Kohen Gadol on the holiest day in the holiest spot of the whole year has to wait and defer to the journey of the individual who is fighting the general challenges, the mundane challenges of life, in order to be able to move forward and achieve kapara for Klal Yisrael. And that is what Yom Kippur is about. It's about the convergence of the world of the Mikdash and the world of the Midbar. The world of the ideal and the world of reality. And we're all told, we're all Imam Leches Kohanim. We all have a dimension. When we pray the Avodah, we daven the Avodah in a couple of days from now, we're supposed to be reliving the experience of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. All of us have a dimension of kahuna to ourselves. We're a mamlachas kohanim. And we're all reaching for that great, apex of spiritual connection on Yom HaKippurim. But simultaneously, we affirm and we recognize that life is not always lived within the Mikdash, even at the most intense Mikdash moments, that life has components and parts of our experience that's very much Midbar related. And this plays out in so many different dimensions of our religious growth. I just want to share with you a couple of insights that relate to this idea. Number one comes, there's actually a good friend of mine, Rabbi Shefkin, who published a sefer, Beroges Rachim Tizkor, where he quotes a beautiful vart that he heard from Rabbi Simcha Willick. If you turn to the next page on source 21, the Medrash in Eicha says, one of the things we're going to daven for over Yom HaKippurim is Chadesh Yameinu Kikedem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should renew our days, Kikedem, like they are days of old. And the question is, what does that mean? That's paradoxical. If you're renewing, if there's a hischadshus, then it can't be days of old. Chadesh Yameinu Kikedem. So the Medrash in Eicha says the following. It quotes the pasuk. What do we mean kikedem? So we don't mean days of old, like in the summer, way before we were in the world of before we were in Elul and working on ourselves. What does kikedem mean? It means the days of Adam Arishon. Chadesh Yameinu. You should renew our days. Ki yamei kedem, like the days of Adam HaRishon, when things were amazing, when things were great, the real early days. What pasuk does the Medrash quote? So there are two times in Bereshis where the Torah uses the word Kedem, relating to Adam and Gan Eden. One is in Perek Beis, where the Torah says, Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden Mikedem. And the other is in Source 23, when the Torah says, Vayigoresh Esa Adam Vayishkan Mikedem LeGan Eden. So the question that's asked is, why is it that the Medrash quotes the Pasuk related to the Gerush of Adam from Gan Eden, and not the experience when he was put in Gan Eden? When he was put in Gan Eden, everything was perfect. The world was in its pristine perfection. Everything was wonderful. There were no issues. When they're kicked out of Gan Eden, that's not Chadesh Yomenu Kikedem. Chadesh Yomenu Kikedem, the Medrash should have quoted the Pasuk referring to the original experience of Gan Eden. The answer is that when we daven for his Chadshus, we don't daven for his Chadshus for a moment of totally unrealistic, unachievable, unreachable perfection that exists in the world of Kodesh Kedosh, that exists in the world of Gan Eden Kodem Achet. When we daven for perfection, what we're davening for, Gan Eden Mikedem refers to the capacity of Adam and Chava to start again. Their ability to be able to move forward, even after confronting such challenges in life, that they have the ability to move forward and to begin again. And that's what we mean. Chadesh Yomenu Kekedem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give us the strength. Give us the inner motivation, the aspiration, the inspiration. Give us that ability to be able to start again. That even though things aren't perfect, even though there is a midbar that is very much part of our daily life, our daily existence, help us and inspire us with the ability to move again. And this is true on a communal level as well. It's interesting. The Rambam writes in Source 26, Mitzvah Saseh, Lasos Bayis LaHashem, Muchon Lios Makrivim Bo Karbonos. The Rambam quotes the mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdosh. The Rambam says there's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdosh. What pasuk does the Rambam quote in the mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdosh? So the Rambam quotes the pasuk, V'asuli Mikdosh, V'shachanti B'solchan. All of the Mefarshim on the Rambam ask, that's the pasuk that describes the mitzvah to build the Mishkan. That's not the pasuk that describes. There are psukim in the Torah that relate to building a Beis HaMikdosh. There are psukim in the Torah that talk about when we return to Eretz Yisrael, when we arrive in Eretz Yisrael, we have a mitzvah to build. Amokam Asher Yibchar. Why is the Rambam quoting the Mishkan as a source for the mitzvah to build Beis Hashem? So very often we talk about the fact that the Rambam felt that there's a component to the temporal nature of the Mishkan that has to be integrated into the larger, more structured and settled and entrenched experience of the Mikdash. But perhaps what the Rambam is really telling us is that now that you're standing to build this Mikdash Hashem, now that you are convening to be able to create a space in the world that literally radiates with the most intense dynamics of the presence of the Shekhinah, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, remember that the foundation of all of that is connecting that experience back to the Mishkan. Where does the Mishkan evolve? The Mishkan evolves in the Midbar. The Mishkan, according to many Rishonim, is a reaction to the Chet HaEgel. The Mishkan is an example of beginning again. The Mishkan is an example of all of the challenges that grip our lives, all of the midbar moments that grip our lives. The Mishkan is part of what you have to create as a fact. There is no Beis Hashem without the world of the Mishkan, without the world of the midbar. There is no building the Mikdash unless you're able to also integrate the midbar as well. I want to share with you just a couple of more thoughts. And this idea actually manifests itself as well in the conclusion of the Yom HaKippurim experience. Because what happens in the end? A very strange Gemara. The Gemara tells us on Daf, excuse me, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, source number 30, Ayin Aleph, and two lines before the end, the Gemara tells us, Asi Mishaleach. So, the Kohen Gadol, on Yom Kippur afternoon, said sayonara to the Ish Iti. Sent him on his way. He made his way to the Midbar. He sees the flags. Now he knows he can go read the Torah. What is the mechanism by which the Kohen Gadol learns that this entire avoda actually culminated with the Dechias Latzok, with the pushing the animal off the cliff. How does he know? So the Gemara tells us that what happens? Asi mishaleach matzohu bishuk l'kohen gadol. That it's the day after Yom Kippur, and where does the mishaleach and the kohen gadol find themselves? In the shuk. And what happens? Omar lo ishi kohen gadol asinu shlichusech. I want you to know, kohen gadol, I did the shlichus. I pushed it off the thing. I saw the Lashon Shel Zohoris turn white. I know for sure that Klal Yisrael was forgiven for their averus. The question is, what in the world are they doing in the shuk? What in the world is the kohen gadol? Why isn't the destination for this meeting in the mikdash? Why doesn't the guy? It doesn't make any sense. It's like it's the day after Yom Kippur, and the kohen gadol's walking around Garden State Plaza shopping for sukkis. I don't know, coming out of Joseph A. Bank with, you know, one suit for six free, all white, whatever, right? He's shopping, he's doing his thing. The Ish Iti's walking around, says, hey, Shalom Aleichem. The kohen gadol's like, oh yeah, by the way, how'd it go with the Azazel? Oh, I pushed it off the cliff, everything was fine, a few Peter protesters, but we were able to get through, you know, the kaparas is nothing compared to, right? And that was it. And now, Clyde, the Lashon Shizahuris, it turned white, it was great. I sold it as souvenirs afterwards. Everybody's happy, everyone's fine. The kohen gadol's like, great, Shkayach, everybody. What are they doing in the shuk? Why isn't this happening in the mikdash? And the answer is, because the measure of the accomplishment of Avodas Yom HaKippurim is not whether or not this recapitulation, this reintroduction of these two personalities can happen in the Mikdash. Because the Mikdash is over. Yom Kippur is over. The Kodesh Kedashim is over. The living in that intense experience of sanctity, that sort of, you know, encapsulated environment of intense Kedusha, it's gone, it's over. We're now at the point that you have to re-enter the reality of life, the midbar of life. So where does the Kohen Gadol and the Ish Iti meet up to confirm the ultimate culmination of Avodas Yom HaKippurim? It happens not in the Mikdash, but it happens in the midbar. It happens in the environment in which all of that challenge percolates and all of that challenge ultimately develops. And I'll share with you one other insight, and that is that I believe this is why, if you look at source 31 and 32, the Ramah tells us, at the very end of Hilchas Yom HaKippur, what does the Ramah say you're supposed to do on Motzei Yom Kippur? What does the Ramah say you're supposed to do in Yotzei Yom Kippur? The Ramah says, V'amidaktikim matchilim miyad b'motzei Yom HaKippurim ba'asiyas hasukah k'dei lotzeis mi-mitzvah el mitzvah. What should you do? You should start building the sukkah so that you can move from mitzvah to mitzvah. Is building a sukkah a mitzvah? No. Building a sukkah is a hechsher mitzvah, right? Well, there's discussion. Maybe there's a bracha, maybe there's a shechiyano, maybe that's a sukkah, Yerushalmi, Bavli. Bottom line, is building a sukkah the mitzvah of teshu? Is building a sukkah the mitzvah of sukkah? No. Building a sukkah is getting ready for the mitzvah of sukkah. Peculiarity number one. What would I say? We're in a yeshiva. What do you think you should be doing on Motzei Yom Kippur? So learn Torah, say Tehillim, I don't know, go do Chesed, go do a mitzvah. You want to be masmich Yom Kippur to a mitzvah? You want to make sure that you juxtapose mitzvah to mitzvah? Take a mitzvah. Take a big, juicy, serious mitzvah. Go do a real. You're building the sukkah? I don't know about you, I learned a lot of words as a little kid when I watched my parents build the sukkah. They build a mitzvah. Everybody's yelling at each other when you build a sukkah. You know, we just expanded our sukkah. You should have seen what went on, because the boards that we thought we brought were not with the boards that we did bring. And this is mamish, like, this is why there is a Maisa Kedushin when you start off. You know what I'm saying? For moments like that, you know, this is, you know, building a sukkah. That's what you're going to do on Motzei Yom Kippur and stub your toe and nail your hand. And well, these are Jews building a sukkah. We should all go to Home Depot. That's where we should be on Motzei Yom Kippur, looking around for a screw that fits into a thing. And then, like, you know, like, what? That's Yom Kippur? The second peculiarity is that the Ramah, in a period of literally nothing, from one page to the other, says this twice. In the beginning of Hilchas Sukkah, the Ramah says, U'mitzvah letakein asukkah, miyad la'achar Yom HaKippurim, mishum havo liyodo al yichamsena. Why? Because what should you do when you start learning Hilchas Sukkah? You should know, now that you're learning Hilchas Sukkah, there's a mitzvah on Motzei Yom Kippur to build your sukkah. The Rama just said this. What, this is the same person. The Rama just said this one line ago. Why is he saying the same thing twice? Why is he insisting we build the sukkah on Motzei Yom Kippur? I'll tell you the answer. The answer is because you have spent the entire day of Yom HaKippurim in the Mikdash. You have spent the entire day totally enveloped in the world of sanctity, in the world of the Mikdash. What is sukkah? What is sukkah? What does sukkah represent? Why do we sit in a sukkah? What is sukkah? Sukkah is reenacting the world of the Midbar. Sukkah is reenacting the ability. Sukkah is the Anani HaKobod. It's the Sukkos Mamish. No matter which opinion you take, it happens in the Midbar. It happens in the Midbar. Sukkos is about experiencing the Hashkakas Hashem, the protection of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, not in the Beis Medrash, not in the world of the Shul, not in the Beis HaKnesses. Sukkah is about experiencing it in the Midbar, where it's cold, or where I grew up in Los Angeles, where it was too hot to sit in the sukkah, right? Sukkah's about with the bees and the honey, I mean, the mosquitoes, the sukkah, it's hard, it's in the Midbar, it's not easy. Says the Ramah, immediately after Yom Kippur, you have to pull yourself, that's the avoda. The avoda is, can you take the world of Avodas Yom HaKippurim and bring it to the Shuk? Can you take the world of Avodas Yom HaKippurim and ultimately bring it to the sukkah? And that is ultimately what the whole experience, the whole cast of Avodas Yom HaKippurim is about. And that's why this interconnection between the Ish Iti and the Kohen Gadol manifests the larger challenge that we all have in our lives. The challenge of trying to achieve greatness, the challenge of the expectation of Yahadus to live in recreations of perfection and purity, to be able to don a kittel, to be able to recite the Nisan HaTokef, to stand on a day where we're told, Ashreichem Yisrael, we're all going to achieve Kapara, to stand on the day of Kodesh Kedoshim, but to do so recognizing that we embrace the challenges of our lives that exist in the world of the Midbar, in the world of trying to move us forward. And I just want to close with a bracha for all of us, that we should all find the strength, and we should all find the inspiration not only to connect this Yom HaKippurim to the world of the Mikdash and the world of the Tefillah and the world of Talmud Torah, but to be able to allow all of those experiences to influence and to inspire and to motivate what becomes our daily challenge, which is to ultimately confront the challenges that we have in our Midbars, in our individual Midbars, in our familial Midbars, and in Klal Yisrael's Midbar. In the realities that will percolate and will emerge once we begin building that sukkah on Motzei Yontif, and Mirtz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring us to a place where we could find geula and find it. Have a wonderful.